starring Michael Horton as Jeeves, Richard Bryars as Bertie Wooster, and James Villiers as Esmond Haddock. From the book, The Mating Season, Episode 1, Deverill Hall.
While I would not go so far, perhaps, as to describe the heart as actually leaden, I must confess that on the eve of starting to do my bit of time at Deverill Hall, I was definitely short on chirpiness. My Aunt Agatha, the one who chews broken bottles and kills rats with her teeth, had suddenly arrived in London and instructed me, in her authoritative way, to proceed to this residence of some pals of hers in King's Deverill, Hants, and lend my services to the village concert. Apparently they wanted to stiffen up the programme with some metropolitan talent, and I'd been recommended by the vicar's niece. And it didn't make the outlook any brighter to know that Gussie Finknottle would be among those present at Deverill Hall. I wonder, by the way, if you recall this Augustus. Goofy to the gills, face like a fish, horn-rimmed spectacles, drank orange juice, collected newts, engaged to England's premier pill, a girl called Madeline Bassett. You've got him? Fine. Then you'll understand why I felt that if I was to be trapped in the den of the secret nine, I would need something a lot better than him to help keep the upper lip stiff. I mentioned all this to Jeeves, and he agreed that the setup could have been juicier. Still, it's flattering, of course, being the people's choice, Jeeves, having these birds going round chanting, "We want Worcester."
Ah, yes, sir. Precisely. Most gratifying.
I just wish I had more data about the gang at Deverill Hall. So far, all I've gathered is that I'm to be the guest of a landed proprietor called Harris or Hacker or possibly Hassock.
Haddock, sir. Mr. Esmond Haddock.
Haddock? That name seems to strike a chord, Jeeves, as if I've heard it before somewhere.
Mr. Haddock is the son of the owner of a widely advertised patent remedy known as Haddock's Headache Hokies, sir. Possibly the specific is familiar to you?
Of course, I know it well. Not so sensationally good as those pick-me-ups of yours, of course, but nonetheless a sound standby on the morning after. So he's one of those Haddocks, is he?
Yes, sir. The young gentleman's late father married the late Miss Flora Deverill.
Before they were both late, of course.
Precisely, sir.
I see. How do you know all this, Jeeves?
An odd chance, sir. My Uncle Charlie holds the post of butler at the hall, sir. It is from him that I derive my information.
Really? I didn't know you had an Uncle Charlie. Charlie Jeeves?
No, sir. Charlie Silversmith.
Well, this is a bit of goose. You'll be able to give me all the salient facts, then, if salient is the word I want. Would there be a Mrs. Haddock?
No, sir. The young gentleman is unmarried. He resides at the hall with his five aunts.
Five?
Yes. The Mrs. Charlotte, Emmeline, Harriet, and Myrtle Deverill, and Dame Daphne Winkworth, relict of the late P.B. Winkworth, the historian. Dame Daphne's daughter, Miss Gertrude Winkworth, is, I understand, also in residence.
I see. No stint of female society.
No, sir.
I may find Gussie's company a relief.
Very possibly, sir.
But tell me, how does Gussie come to be mixed up with these bacteria genes? Surely a bit of an inscrutable mystery that he, too, should be headed for Deverill Hall.
No, sir. The matter is susceptible of a ready explanation. Dame Daphne Winkworth is the godmother of Miss Madeline Bassett. Miss Bassett wishes to exhibit Mr. Finknottle to the lady whom he has not yet met.
I see. Did you get that from Uncle Charlie?
No, sir. It was Mr. Finknottle himself who informed me.
You've seen him, then?
Yes, sir. He called while you were out.
How did he seem?
Low-spirited, sir. He had supposed that Miss Bassett would be accompanying him, but at the last moment she has gone to reside with an old school friend who has recently suffered a disappointment in love. I gathered from his remarks, for he was kind enough to confide in me, that there has resulted a certain coolness between himself and Miss Bassett.
Gosh, Jeeves.
Precisely, sir.
Golly.
Exactly, sir.
That's bad news.
Yes, sir.
Well, let us hope it's just a lover's tiff, Jeeves. Always happening, these lover's tiffs, aren't they?
Yes, sir.
Ah, someone waits without. Who do you think it is?
I would imagine that it is Mr. Purbright, sir.
Oh, cat's meat?
Yes, sir. He also called during your absence and indicated that he would return later. He was accompanied by his sister, Miss Purbright.
Good
Lord, really? I thought Corky was in Hollywood.
I understand that she has returned to England for a vacation.
Oh, how are they both?
Miss Pirbright was in good humor, sir. Mr. Pirbright, contrary-wise, was low-spirited.
Well, you're mixing him up with Gussie. It was Gussie, if you recall, who was low-spirited.
And Mr. Pirbright also.
Oh, there seems to be a lot of low-spiritedness kicking about these days.
We live in difficult times.
True. Well, you better bung him in, Jeeves.
Very good, sir. Mr. Pirbright, sir.
Hello, Bertie.
Cat's meat. What's the matter? Thank you, Jeeves.
Whiskey and soda.
Oh, right, old man. What's up? Oh, I'm sorry I wasn't in when you called earlier. You had Corky with you, I believe. I should have loved a chat with Corky. Now, I suppose I've missed her. Here.
Thanks. You haven't missed her, Bertie.
Another?
Yes, please.
I'm afraid I have, Casley. I leave tomorrow for Tunes Devereux Hants to help with the village concert. It seems the vicar's niece insisted on having me in the troupe. What's puzzling me is how this girl of God heard of me.
You silly ass, she's Corky. Thanks.
Corky?
My uncle Sidney is vicar down there, and my aunt's away at Bournemouth. In her absence, Corky is keeping house for him.
But doesn't she find a vicarage rather slow after being a Hollywood star?
Not a bit. She loves it. Her dream is to marry someone who lives in the country and spend the rest of her life knee-deep in cows. Messing about in the parish and putting on village concerts is just her dish.
I see. Any idea what she wants me to give the local yokels, incidentally? Not the yeoman's wedding song, I trust. That always seems to arouse the worst passions of rustic standees.
No. You're billed to play Pat in that knockabout Pat and Mike crosstalk act of mine the Pongo Twistleton and Barmy Phipps do each year at the Drone Smoker.
Oh, fine. But tell me, if Corky wanted someone for Pat, why didn't she get you? You being a seasoned professional of the sock and buskin, I mean. Or are you about such amateur stuff?
Not at all. Nothing would please me more than to perform at the concert, but the shot isn't on the board. Those women at the hall hate my insides.
Oh, so you've met them. What are they like?
No, I haven't met them, but I'm engaged to their niece, Gertrude Winkworth, and the idea of her marrying me gives them the pip. That's what I came to see you about, actually, Bertie. I should like to begin by saying that since the first human being crawled out of the primeval slime and life began on this planet, nobody has ever loved anybody as I love Gertrude Winkworth. She's wonderful, Bertie. Why she loves me, I can't imagine.
But she does.
Oh, yes, she does. We met in Norfolk and got engaged. But when she returned to Devereux Hall to break the news to her mother, what do you think happened?
You got the bird?
Yes, I had a sad letter from Gertrude saying no dice. You may ask, why don't we elope?
I was just going to.
I couldn't swing it. She fears her mother's wrath.
A tough character, this mother.
Of the toughest. It's a frightful situation.
Yes. Another?
Oh, if I may. But that's not all. We now come to the hellhound Haddock. Do you know anything about this grade A louse?
Well, only that his late father was the proprietor of Haddock's Headache Hokies.
And left him enough money to sink a ship. Thanks. But in addition to having more cash than you could shake a stick at, he's a sort of Greek god in appearance and extremely magnetic, so Gertrude says.
You mean Haddock is trying to move in?
Gertrude writes that he is giving her the rush of a lifetime. And this will show you the sort of flitting and sipping butterfly the hound is. It's only a short while ago that he was giving Corky a similar rush. I tell you, the man is a public menace. But we'll fix him, won't we, Bertie?
Will we?
You bet we will. Here's what I want you to do. Be always at Gertrude's side. Stick to her like glue. If a visit to the Rose Garden is mooted, include yourself in. You follow me, Bertie?
I follow you, yes. What you have in mind is something on the lines of Mary's lamb. I don't know if you happen to know the poem. I used to recite it as a child. Broadly, the nub was that Mary had a little lamb with fleece as white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. You want me to model my technique on that of Mary's little lamb?
That's it?
Oh.
I'm relying on you, Bertie. My life's happiness depends on you.
Oh. Well, right ho, then.
I only wish there was something I could do for you in return.
There is, actually, cat's meat.
Oh?
Yes. You know Gussie Fingnottle?
Yes.
Well, he's had a tiff with Madeline Bassett. Just a passing coolness, I'm sure. But you know how it is in that sort of situation. You go off for a solitary dinner. You start brooding over the girl with the soup and wonder if it wasn't a mug's game hitching up with her. With the fish, this feeling deepens so that by the time you're ordering the coffee, you've come to the conclusion that she's a rag and a bone and a hank of hair, and that it would be madness to sign her on as a life partner. But there are reasons why I prefer this not to happen in the case of A. Finknottle. So could you give him a spot of dinner?
Hmm.
I know what you're thinking, Casimir. You're saying to yourself that the first essential for an enjoyable dinner party is for Gussie not to be at it.
Quite. Give Gussie Finknottle dinner, you say?
That's right.
Why can't you?
I'm engaged elsewhere.
Well, all right then.
Heaven bless you, Catsmeat. And so, with Gussie off my mind, I retired to rest that night with a light heart, little knowing, as the expression is, what the morrow was to bring forth. Though, as a matter of fact, in its early stages, the morrow brought forth some pretty good stuff. Lunch at the Drones, followed by a game or two of rackets at Queen's Club, put me in excellent fettle. And I don't mind admitting that as I latchkeyed myself back into the flat around tea time, I was feeling nothing short of fizzy. It was the last time I did. Crossing the threshold, I became aware of a sort of loud barking sound, as of hounds on the trail, proceeding from my sitting room. It was as though my boudoir had been selected by the Quorn or the Pytchley as the site for their most recent meet. I opened the door and was immediately knocked base over apex by some solid body with a tongue like an anteater's. This tongue, it proceeded to pass enthusiastically over my upper slopes, and the mists clearing away, I perceived that what I was tangled up with was a shaggy dog of mixed parentage. And standing beside us, looking down like a mother watching the gambols of her firstborn, was Catsmeat's sister, Corky.
Yes, dear Lambert. This is absolute terror.
No, let me up. Will you let me up? Thank you. The bally animal looks like Boris Karloff made up for something.
His name's Sam Goldwyn. I bought him yesterday at the Battersea Home.
Did you? Down, sir. Out. Good boy. Well, Corky, Pip and all that. It's nice to see you again, anyway.
It's lovely to see you too, Bertie. How are you?
Fine. I hear you're organizing the village concert in King's Deverell, for which my services have been engaged.
Yes, that's right. And I don't mind telling you, the public is expecting big things from you, Bertie. For days, the whole village has been talking of nothing else but the coming visit of Bertram Wooster, the great London comic.
Oh!
You will be the high spot of the programme. And goodness knows, it can do with a high spot or two.
Quite. Who are my supporting cast?
Just the Scourings of the neighbourhood. And Esmond Haddock. He's singing a song.
Ah, yes, Esmond Haddock. Catsmeat was telling me about Esmond Haddock.
What did he say?
He seemed to hint that you and this modern Casanova were at one time holding hands, but that after a while he cast you aside like a worn-out glove and attached himself to Gertrude Winkworth. Quite incorrect, probably. I expect he got the whole story muddled up.
No, he didn't. We were holding hands, but Esmond didn't cast me aside like a worn-out glove. I cast him aside like a worn-out glove. I told him I wouldn't have any more to do with him unless he asserted himself and stopped crawling to those aunts of his.
He crawls to his aunts, does he?
Yes, the worm. When it came to being scared to tell his aunts we were engaged, I put my foot down. I said he'd got to tell them, and he turned green and said, oh, he couldn't. And I said, all right, then, let's call the whole thing off. And I haven't spoken to him since, except to ask him to sing this song at the concert. And the unfortunate part of it all is, Bertie, that I'm crazier about him than ever. Just to think of him makes me want to howl and chew the carpet.
Oh, there. Too bad. What?
Oh, it's all right. It's just one of those things, I suppose. Down, boy, down.
Yes, Jeeves? Mr. Purbright, sir?
Catsmeat.
Hello, Catsmeat, darling.
Hello.
Oh, my head. Jeeves, one of your special morning afters, if you please.
Very good.
Sit!
So you were lathered last night, were you?
I was perhaps a mite polluted.
Why?
Eh?
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why did you get Scrooge?
Oh, don't shout, Corky.
You promised me faithfully you wouldn't get pie-eyed, you poor fish. What price the word of the Purbrights?
When I gave the word of the Purbrights, I didn't know I should be dining with Gussie Finknottle. Bertie will bear me out that it is not humanly possible to get through an evening alone with Gussie without large quantities of stimulants.
Quite right. And last night, I should imagine, he was low-spirited to boot.
Very low-spirited. After a bit, I saw there was only one thing to be done. I told the waiter to bring a magnum and leave it at my elbow. After that, things seemed to get better.
Did Mr. Finknottle drink as much as you?
Not a drop.
Well, the only thing Gussie drinks is that obscene beverage produced by putting half an orange on a squeezer and pushing.
Oh, Bertie, I am going to track Jeeves down in his lair. I need that dynamite special instanter. I don't think I have long to live.
Right-ho, old bean.
Well, when do you go down to Deverell, Bertie?
Eh? Oh, this evening.
How do you feel about it?
Not too good, Corky, I must confess. A certain coolness in the feet. I've never at my best in the society of aunts, even those of another. And according to Jeeves, there's a solid gaggle of them at Deverell Hall. 5, he says.
Yes, that's right.
It's a lot.
5 too many. I don't think you like them, Bertie. One's deaf, one's dotty, and they're all bitches.
You use strong words, child.
Only because I can't think of any stronger. Sam!
Sam! Ah, Jeeves. Yes?
I have placed Mr. Purbright in the spare bedroom, sir.
Is he dead?
No, sir. Asleep only.
Right-ho, then, Jeeves.
May I make a remark, sir?
Certainly, Jeeves. Carry on.
Thank you, sir. It is with reference to Mr. Purbright, sir. The young gentleman has been good enough to take me into his confidence concerning the events of yesterday evening.
Do you mean he can remember them?
Yes, miss.
Well, get on, Jeeves. To what events do you allude?
Those occurring post-prandially, sir. Following dinner at the Dorchester, it appears that Mr. Purbright chartered a taxi, and he and Mr. Finknottle then visited East Dulwich, Ponder's End, and Limehouse, sir. In that order.
Limehouse?
Yes, sir. Mr. Purbright informed me that he wished to compare its blues, as I believe they are termed, with his own.
And what about East Dulwich and Ponder's End?
Mr. Purbright cannot recollect any reason for visiting those places, sir.
Oh, carry on.
Thank you, sir. It appears that the two young gentlemen eventually finished up in Trafalgar Square at approximately 5 o'clock this morning. And it was there, according to Mr. Purbright, that he was in the receipt of an idea which, despite its attractiveness at the time, he now admits to having been a mistake. It appears, sir, that Mr. Purbright, speculating that there might be newts in the Trafalgar Square fountain, and knowing Mr. Finknottle's enthusiasm for such amphibia, persuaded the latter gentleman to search for any that might be present by wading around in the water.
What? With all his clothes on?
Yes, miss. Mr. Purbright informed me that he remembers noticing that Mr. Finknottle was wearing his clothes.
But you can't go wading in the Trafalgar Square fountain with all your clothes on, Jeeves.
Nevertheless, it appears that Mr. Finknottle did so, sir, albeit reluctantly. According to Mr. Purbright, he stubbornly refused to enter the fountain until Mr. Purbright threatened a physical assault upon his person with a magnum of champagne.
And then he waded?
Yes, sir.
I wonder he wasn't pinched.
He was, miss. A constable arrested the young gentleman. And this morning at Bosher Street Police Court, he was given a prison sentence of 14 days without the option of a fine.
What? You mean he's in stir?
Precisely, sir.
But he's due at Deverell Hall this evening.
Yes, sir.
Shall I tell you something, Bertie? He won't be there.
But, geez, look, what's Miss Bassett going to say? What would her attitude be when she learns the facts? She opens tomorrow's paper. She sees that loved name in headlines in the police court section.
No, sir.
Huh? No?
No, sir. Mr. Finknottle, showing considerable and, if I may say so, commendable astuteness, gave his name as Alfred Duff Cooper.
Oh. Well, all right. But what's going to happen when he doesn't turn up at the hall? Questions will be asked. And Jeeves.
Yes, sir?
You're letting your attention wander.
I beg your pardon, sir. I was observing the dog. If you notice, sir, he has commenced to eat the sofa cushion.
Never mind about the dog.
I think it would be advisable to remove the little fellow to the kitchen, sir. I will return as soon as he is safely immured. Come along, sir.
Oh, golly.
Bertie, what is all this about? Why all the excitement and agony? I could understand Mr. Fink Nottle being a little upset by the latest turn of events, but why are you skipping like the high hills? And why is what this Bassett thinks so important?
I'll tell you, Corky. In fact, I'm rather glad that Jeeves has temporarily absented himself from the conference table because I couldn't unbosom myself freely about the Bassett in his presence.
Why ever not?
To do so would be bandying a woman's name.
Who? Oh, and the Worcesters do not bandy a woman's name.
Certainly not. Nor, for the matter of that, do the Jeeveses. He knows all about it, of course, and I know he knows, but we do not discuss it. However, let us return to the matter under advisement. Briefly, I won't go into details now. Last summer, this frightful Bassett got the impression firmly fixed in her woolen head that Bertram was pining away for love of her. In fact, she told me that if ever she discovered that Gussie was not the rare, stainless soul she thought him, she would return him to store and make me happy.
Why does she want him to be a rare, stainless soul?
She's an idealistic girl, Corky, and she'll not take kindly to the news that the man on whom she looks as a purer, loftier spirit than other men is doing 14 days in the jug. No, let this Bassett M become hep to what has occurred, and there can be but one result. Gussie will get the bum's rush, and I shall have no option but to take the rap. But must be civil, after all. And the bowed figure you will see shambling down the aisle at her side will be that of Bertram Wilberforce Worcester.
I didn't know your name was Wilberforce.
Except in moments of great emotion, one hushes it up.
Oh, I see. Well, difficult, Bertie. But how are you going to keep her from finding out? When she hears that Mr. Fink Nottle hasn't arrived at the hall, she's bound to make inquiries.
And those inquiries, once made, must infallibly lead her to the awful truth? Exactly. But there's always Jeeves.
You think he'll be able to fix things?
He never fails. He wears a number 14 hat, eats tons of fish, and moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. See, here he comes, looking as intelligent as dammit. Well, Jeeves, have you speared a solution?
Yes, sir, but...
You see, Corky, did I hear you use the word but, Jeeves? Why but?
It is merely that I entertained a certain misgiving as to whether the solution which I am about to put forward would meet with your approval, sir.
If it's a solution, that's all I want.
Well, sir, to obviate the inquiries which would inevitably be set on foot should Mr. Fink Nottle not present himself at Deverill Hall this evening, it would appear to be essential that a substitute purporting to be Mr. Fink Nottle should take his place.
You aren't suggesting that I check in at this leper colony as Gussie?
Unless you can persuade one of your friends to do so, sir.
You can't go about London asking people to pretend to be Gussie Finknottle. At least you can, I suppose, but what a hell of a life. Besides, there isn't time to. I've got it. Cat's meat?
What?
Cat's meat, come here. This is important. Hurry up.
What is it?
Come here. Listen. A problem has arisen in re Augustus Finknottle. He's due at Deverill Hall this evening.
Yes.
And he's in the coop.
Yes.
Well, Jeeves thinks... what was it, Jeeves?
To obviate the inquiries which would inevitably be set on foot should Mr. Finknottle not present himself at Deverill Hall this evening...
Now, follow this closely, Casper.
It would appear to be essential that a substitute purporting to be Mr. Finknottle should take his place.
You mean Bertie, of course.
We thought of you.
Me?
Yes.
You want me to say I'm Gussie Fink Nottle?
That's right.
No, no. 1,000 times no. What a revolting idea.
Well, I know last night was a bit of a gruesome experience, old egg.
No.
But it would enable you to be under the same roof as Gertrude, Catspeed.
Even to be at my Gertrude's side, I won't have people going about thinking I'm Gussie Fink Nottle. Besides, I couldn't get away with it. I shouldn't be even adequate in the role. I'm much too obviously a man of intelligence, and Gussie must have been widely publicized as the fat-editor's ass in creation. After 5 minutes' conversation with me, the old folks would penetrate the deception like a dose of salts. No, what you want if you are putting on an understudy for Gussie Fink Nottle is someone like Gussie Fink Nottle, so that the eye is deceived. You get the part, Bertie.
You don't think I'm like Gussie?
You might be twins.
I still think you're a chump, Captain.
I will not say I am Gussie Fink Nottle.
Righto. I suppose I must bow to the Inev. In all human affairs, there's got to be a goat or patsy doing the dirty work.
And in the present crisis, I see it has got to be me. Generally happens that way. Whenever there's a job to be taken on of a kind calculated to make humanity shudder, the cry goes up, let Worcester do it. I'm not complaining. I'm just mentioning it. Very well. No need to argue. I'll be Gussie.
Smiling, the boy fell dead. Well done, Bertie. And now, if you don't mind, I'll be returning to your spare room. I need a short nap if I am to face the world again. What was it I heard you call sleep the other day, Jeeves?
Tired nature's sweet restorer, huh, sir?
That was it. And you said a mouthful. Toodly pip.
I think I had better be popping too, Bertie. 100 things to attend to.
Righto, Elsie.
I'll see you in King Deverell, then. Don't bother to show me out, Jeeves.
Very good.
Jeeves, that bally hound.
Yes, sir.
She's forgotten it.
No, sir.
No?
No, sir. Miss Purblight earlier informed me that she wishes you to take the quadruped to the hall for a day or two, sir, in order to give her time to prepare her uncle, the Reverend Sidney Purbright, for the ordeal, sir. The gentleman is not fond of dogs, and it was Miss Purbright's opinion that this particular example of the species might have to be broken to him gently.
What?
Acting on the assumption that you would be desirous of rendering the young lady assistance, I assured her that you would be delighted to fall in with her scheme.
Did you?
Yes, sir.
Well, I am not going to appear at the hall with a dog like that, Jeeves. It would ruin my prestige.
Mr. Finknottle's prestige, sir.
Sorry? Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. Yes. But all the same, Jeeves...
Yes, sir.
What do you mean, yes, sir?
I was endeavouring to convey my appreciation of the fact that your position is, in many respects, somewhat difficult. But I wonder if I might call your attention to an observation of the Emperor Marcus Aurelius. He said, "Does aught befall you, it is good. It is part of the destiny of the universe ordained for you from the beginning. All that befalls you is part of the great web."
He said that, did he?
Yes, sir.
Well, you can tell him from me he's an ass.
Very good, sir.
Now, are my things packed?
Yes, sir.
The two-seater is at the door?
Yes, sir.
Then lead me to it, Jeeves. If I'm to get to this Lazar house before midnight, I'd better be starting.
Very good, son.
Well, I did get there before midnight, of course, but I was dashed late all the same. As might have been expected on a day like this, the two-seater, usually as reliable as an Arab steed, developed some pox or sickness halfway through the journey, with the result that it was getting on for 8 when I at last punched the front doorbell, only to be informed by Jeeves's uncle Charlie, who answered it, that dinner had been underway for 10 minutes. In the circles in which I move, it's pretty generally recognized that I am a resilient sort of bimbo whose fine spirit cannot be crushed. But I've never before been thrust into the position of having to say I was Gussie Finknottle, and slap on top of that, having to dine in a strange house without dressing. And I don't mind admitting that for an instant, everything went black. And what with the agony of feeling like a tramp cyclist, and the embarrassment of having to bolt my rations with everybody, or so it seemed to my inflamed image, clicking their tongues and saying to one another in undertones what a hell of a nuisance this hold-up was, it was not for some time that I was sufficiently restored to take a proper deco at the personnel. As far as the eye could reach, I found myself gazing on a surging sea of aunts. They were tall aunts, short aunts, stout aunts, thin aunts, and an aunt who was carrying on a conversation in a low voice to which nobody seemed to be paying the slightest attention. The dotty one, presumably. At the top of the table, next to an attractive young prune in white, whom I took to be Catsmeet's Gertrude, was a youngish bloke in a well-cut dinner jacket who looked like a combination of a poet and an all-in wrestler. The Greek god, E. Haddock. It would not have surprised you to learn that this Haddock wrote sonnets of a fruity and emotional nature. Nor would you have been astonished if informed that he had recently felled an ox at a single blow. You simply would have felt what an ass the ox must have been to get into an argument with a fellow with a chest like that. No, what was extraordinary was that this Superman was in the habit of crawling to his aunts. But for Corky's evidence, I would have said, looking at him, that there sat a nephew capable of facing the toughest aunt and making her say uncle. And I was just musing on this odd trait in his character
when the subject of the concert came up, and I was dragged into the general conversation for the first time.
I met the vicar this evening. He was most upset.
Really, Myrtle? Why?
Well, it seems... you may know more about this than I do, Daphne.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems that Miss Pearbright has insisted upon introducing into the program of the concert what she describes as... a knockabout crosstalk act.
And what is a knockabout crosstalk act?
Oh, I've no idea. Do you know, Harriet?
No, I do not, Myrtle.
Esmond?
Not me, Aunt Daphne.
Oh, perhaps Augustus can tell us then. Augustus?
What? Oh, yes, rather. It's one of those pattern mic things, don't you know? Two birds come on in green beards, armed with umbrellas. And one bird says to the other bird, "Who is that lady I saw you coming down the street with?" And the second bird says to the first bird, "Faith and be gob, that was no lady. That was my wife." And then the second bird busts the first bird over the beam with his umbrella. And the first bird, not to be behindhand, busts the second bird over the head with his umbrella. And so the long day wears on.
Lots of going on.
Very vulgar.
Terribly vulgar.
Disgustingly vulgar. But how typical of Miss Pearbright to suggest such a performance at a village concert.
Oh, quite right, Daphne.
Well, I am glad that it is this Mr. Wooster, and not you, Augustus, who is disgracing himself by taking part in this degrading horseplay. I mean, imagine how Madeline would feel.
Oh, Madeline would never get over it.
What did you say? Myrtle said, dear. Madeline would never get over it, Charlotte.
Oh, no, thank you.
Dear Madeline is so spiritual.
Quite. No. Well, I wouldn't dream of taking part in such a thing.
I am pleased to hear it, Augustus.
From all I have heard of Mr. Wooster, this kind of vulgar foolery would be quite congenial to him. By the way, where is Mr. Wooster? He was to have arrived this afternoon, and he has not even sent a telegram.
He must be a most erratic young man.
Erratic is a kindly term. He appears to be completely irresponsible. Agatha tells me that sometimes she despairs of him. She says she often wonders if the best thing would not be to put him in a home of some kind. There seems to be no end to his escapades. I believe it is not so long ago that he was arrested and fined for stealing a policeman's helmet in Piccadilly.
Oh, yes, well, that was due to an unfortunate oversight.
I beg your pardon, Augustus.
Well, in pinching a helmet, you see, as of course I don't need to tell you, it's essential before lifting to give a forward shove in order to detach the strap from the officer's chin. This Wooster omitted to do.
Really?
Yes. Still, be that as it may, I wonder if you know the one about the striptease dancer and the performing flea.
Oh, please.
Rather, no. No, not that one. The one about the two men in the train. It's old, of course, so stop me if you've heard it before.
Oh, pray go on, Augustus.
Well, it's about these two deaf men in the train.
My sister Charlotte has the misfortune to be deaf. It is a great affliction.
Oh.
What is he saying?
Augustus is telling us a story, Charlotte. Please, go on, Augustus.
There were these two deaf chaps in the train, don't you know? And it stopped at Wembley. One of them looked out of the window and said, "This is Wembley." And the other said, "I thought it was Thursday." And the first chap said, "Yes, so am I." What?
What did he say? story about two men in the train, dear. One of them said, today is Wednesday, and the other said, I thought it was Thursday. And then the first man said, yes, so did I.
I think we might retire to the drawing room now. Esmond?
Yes, Aunt Daphne?
Don't be too long over your port.
No, Aunt Daphne.
Are you going to stay and have another orange juice, Augustus?
Rather, yes.
Very well, then. Don't be too long.
I say.
Yes?
That story of yours.
Oh, yes.
About the fellows in the train.
Quite.
Well, I was a bit distrait when you were telling it, and I think I may possibly have missed the point. Now, as I got it, there were two men in a train, and it stopped at a station.
That's right.
One of them said, this is Woking. And the other chap said, I'm thirsty. Was that how it went?
Not quite. It was Wembley the train stopped at, and the fellow said he thought it was Thursday.
Was it Thursday?
No. These chaps were deaf, you see. So when the first chap said, this is Woking, the second chap, thinking he said Wednesday, said, so am I. I mean...
Yes, I see. Yes, most amusing. I suppose it's no good offering you any of this.
Well, you know, I wouldn't mind trying it. It would be an experience. It's whiskey or claret or something, isn't it?
A port. You may not like it.
Oh, I think I shall. Oh, yes, it's good. It's very good.
It's supposed to be rather special. Spot more.
Oh, thanks.
I think I'll have another myself. One needs a lot of bracing up these days, I find. Do you know the expression, these are the times that try men's souls?
New to me. Your own?
No, I heard it somewhere.
Very neat.
It is rather. Another?
Thanks.
I think I'll join you. Shall I tell you something?
Do, Esmond, do. You don't mind me calling you Esmond.
I prefer it. I'll call you Gussie.
What? Oh, all right.
The reason I mentioned the times that try men's souls, Gussie...
Yes?
This must go no further.
Not an inch.
Well, then, I'll tell you. My soul, Gussie, is on the rack.
It is?
Yes. I love a girl with every fibre of my being, and she has given me the brush off. Enough to put anyone's soul on the rack, what?
I should say so.
Her name... But naturally, I can't mention names.
Of course not.
So I will merely say that her name is Cora Purbright. Corky to her pals. You don't know her, of course.
Oh, of course not. And she's given you the brusheroo, you said?
Yes. But mark this, Gussie. Even though she's given me the brusheroo, she's still the lodestar of my life.
She is?
Oh, yes. My aunts. Some more port?
Thanks.
My aunts, Gussie, will try to kid you that I love my cousin Gertrude. Don't believe a word of it. I only started surging around Gertrude in order to make Corky jealous.
You did?
Yes. So that she would change her mind.
I see. Well, this is excellent news, Esmond.
Why?
What? No reason. So you haven't lost hope, then?
Not by a jugful. And shall I tell you why I haven't lost hope, Gussie? The other day, a very significant thing happened. Corky came to me and asked me to sing a song at this ghastly concert she's getting up. Now, I take that as definite evidence that the old affection still lingers.
You do?
I do. And what's more, I'm banking everything on that song, Gussie. Shall I tell you why?
Please do.
Well, Corky is an emotional girl. And when she hears the audience cheering me to the echo, I'm the young squire, and I'm pretty popular around these parts. I think it'll do something to her. She will melt. She will relent. Always provided, of course, that I don't get the bird.
You won't get the bird?
You think not?
Not a chance. You go like a breeze.
Gussie, you're a great, great comfort.
I try to be, Esmond. What are you going to sing? The Yeoman's Wedding Song?
No. It's a thing that's been written by my Aunt Charlotte with music by my Aunt Myrtle.
Oh.
I say, would you mind if I just ran through it for you now?
Nothing I'd like better.
Except perhaps another spot of port.
Except that, perhaps. Thanks.
Righto, then.
Oh.
I won't sing the verse. Because it's just a lot of guff about the sun is high up in the sky and the moon is bright and fair and so forth.
Oh,
so
quite sure.
The chorus is what brings home the bacon. That goes like this. Hello, 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 hello.
Just a second. What are you supposed to be doing? Telephoning?
No. It's a hunting song.
Oh, a hunting song. I see. I thought it might be one of those I'm going to telephone my baby things. Right-ho.
Right-ho. Hello, 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 hello. A hunting we will go, pom-pom. A hunting we will go.
I don't like that.
What?
That pom-pom.
Oh, well, that's just the accompaniment.
It isn't in the script.
No. Shall I continue?
Do.
Well, where was I?
Better start at the beginning.
Good idea. Hello, 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 hello. A hunting we will go, pom-pom. A hunting we will go. Today's the day, so come what may. A hunting we will go.
It's all wrong, Esmond.
All wrong?
Well, you think it up yourself. You start off, a hunting we will go, a hunting we will go. And then just as the audience is all keyed up for a punchline, you repeat that a hunting you will go. There will be a sense of disappointment.
You think so, Gussie?
I'm sure of it, Esmond.
What do you advise?
Well, try this.
Hello, 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 hello. A hunting we will go, my lads, a hunting we will go. Pull up your socks and chase the fox and lay the blighter low.
I say, that's very good.
It's stronger, I think.
It's much stronger. Now, how do you go on from there?
Oh, hearken to the merry horn, over break and over fall, upon this jolly hunting morn. A hunting we will go.
Yes, well, I passed the first two lines. Merry horn, break and fawn. Not bad at all. Atta girl, Charlotte. We always knew you had it in you. But not the finish.
You don't like it?
Weak. Very weak. I don't know what sort of standees you get at King's Deverell, but if they're like the unshaven thugs behind the back row at every village concert I've ever known, you're simply inviting them to chi-ike and make a noise like tearing calico. Now, we must do better than that. Let me think now. Born, corn, torn, torn, torn. Ah, I think I have it.
Oh, hearken to the merry horn, over break and over fawn. We'll ride although our bags get torn. What-ho, what-ho, what-ho.
That's terrific. I was hoping you'd like it.
How do you think of these things, Gussie?
Oh, they just come to one.
It lifts the whole thing. I say, we might run through the revised version, old man, shall we?
Well, it's no time like the present, dear old chap. Ready?
Yes.
One, two, three, four.
Hello, 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 hello. A hunting we will go, my lads, a hunting we will go. Pull up your socks and chase the fox and lay the blighter low. Oh, hearken to the merry horn, over break and over horn. We'll ride although our bags get torn.
What ho,
what ho,
what ho.
Esmond!
Oh, gosh.
What are you doing on the table, Esmond?
Sorry, Aunt Gatley, but it's quite all right.
All right?
Well, we were rehearsing, you see, for the concert, you know.
Oh? Well, we are expecting you in the drawing room.
Yes, Aunt Gatley.
Gertrude is waiting to play backgammon with you.
Yes, Aunt Gatley.
If you feel capable of playing backgammon.
Oh, yes, Aunt Daphne. I'll go at once.
That's better. As for you, Augustus, I think it would be better if you were to go straight to bed. Not a very good start to your visit. I don't know what Madeline would say. Good night.
Good night.
In that episode, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie, Richard Bryars, Esmond Haddock, James Villiers, Corky Purbright, Joe Kendall, Catsmead Purbright, Kenneth Fortescue, Dame Daphne Winkworth, Miriam Margulies, other parts, Maddie Head and Elizabeth Morgan. The episode was adapted for radio by Chris Miller from the book The Mating Season by P.G. Woodhouse. The program was produced by Peter Titheridge.